James Rozica. My name's Andres Lorente, and we're here together again at the Popcorn Counter.
At the Popcorn Counter, my favorite place to hang out after we watched a film.
After A Raisin in the Sun, a couple weeks ago, watching that film, one of those actors was in a show that I grew up watching a lot as a kid. I had to do it secretly, which was Hogan's Heroes.
Okay.
He played a POW in some sort of prison camp in, I guess it was in Germany. I don't even really remember many of the details, but...
Now, Hogan's Heroes, that's a show which I'm sort of vaguely aware of, but in my mind, it's mixed up with MASH, which I never really understood, and that was obviously a little bit too grown up for me when I was a kid. But also, it's kind of it's mixed up with Happy Days in my mind as well.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know whether it's something to do with the way that it was shot or just all American TV looked the same to me. But I never quite understood what Hogan's Heroes was or whether it was whether it was a comedy or whether it was a drama or whether I should be watching a different channel. What was Hogan's Heroes?
It was a crew of five or six American soldiers who'd been imprisoned by the Nazis in World War II. And they were
It's actually set in the Nazi camp or whatever.
Yeah, but I don't think it was a concentration camp because the conditions were pretty good, actually. So, and the reason I couldn't watch it was my father thought it sort of oversimplified World War II and
A television program? No.
It was a comedy. It didn't take the Nazis seriously.
Okay.
And I think it just, it didn't make them dangerous enough because they were all klutzes. They were comic characters and the Americans were always outwitting them. And I think he just felt like it did not offer a realistic portrayal of what was a very serious matter. So,
but I presume Hogan's Heroes were, and I almost said Hulk Hogan's Heroes there, which is probably a different show. but I presume Hogan's Heroes were outwitting the Nazis, but not escaping from the camp.
No, you wouldn't. If they escaped, then you wouldn't have the television show. So they always had to fail in one point or another. So we couldn't watch it. So we had to get our Nazis elsewhere.
When I was a kid, Nazis were like everywhere, all over the comics that I would read. So I felt like I had a fairly steady diet of Nazis, but I had to look at small black and white drawings of them rather than see them on screen. The Nazis have been a pretty staple component of cinematic entertainment since 1945 in one way or another, haven't they? Yeah. I feel like we've seen a lot of Nazis. Nazis are like the go-to for baddies. Am I not right?
I think you're absolutely right. And it makes sense in one very obvious way that they're just automatic antagonists and they're very real. And for certain generations of people, they're close. I think you would think that maybe that power would wear off after decades and decades between World War II and now, but they are still strong. They keep coming back. So I think that's the reason why they just make it a great automatic enemy. They're absolutely evil always, and it just gives you heroes to play against. It gives you someone for your protagonist to battle automatically. So it makes sense. It gets a little tiresome, though, too, doesn't it? I mean, there was a point where there's just always – probably always has been some sort of Nazi film in the works.
I think the Nazis are partly responsible for their – their role as go-to antagonists because they concentrated so hard on branding, didn't they?
Yes.
The great thing about Nazis, and I use that phrase since that's something someone's going to clip out of the show and have a little isolated clip of. The usable thing about Nazis is that you don't really need to explain too hard who they are.
No.
And you only need to show a swastika or a jackboot and everybody is aware of what you're dealing with.
Shorthand for evil.
They were so into the iconography that it makes them like an easy mark.
Yeah. Agreed. I think there was a point when I was 11 or 12 where the Soviets sort of seem to have displaced the Nazis for a little while. So there were, Red Dawn area and any of those films. We started, in the United States anyway, we started to focus on the Soviets as being the bad guys. So they sort of displaced the Nazis for a decade or so, but the Nazis endure. That's the thing, is they're back. And they never went away, I guess.
The Soviets have that kind of weird thing where it feels like, you know, half of the Republican Party love Russia these days.
Yes.
They're not the enemy anymore. They're our favorite friends, which seems very, very weird from this side of the Atlantic. I made a little list here. I knew we were going to talk about this, so I did make a little list of Nazis on screen.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with the bottom one of my list because it's most recent in my memory, which is Star Wars.
Oh, yeah?
Star Wars doesn't feature any actual Nazis, but you know what? All the bad guys, they are Nazis, aren't they? I mean, the bad guys are called Stormtroopers. They're not trying to halt it, to hide it, are they?
Not at all.
It was kind of fascinating watching. There's a little YouTube video you can watch. It's only 45 seconds long or whatever, that shows those bits that Star Wars have quoted from Triumph of the Will. And there is, you know, a lot of imagery that has been scooped straight up out of Triumph of the Will and slapped on the screen in Star Wars. Star Wars has a lot to do with Nazis.
Yeah, it does. And it's not that far removed from George Lucas doing Indiana Jones too. Doesn't Indiana Jones feature?
Yes. Yeah. You're right, actually. Yes, it is George Lucas and Nazis.
Maybe he has a Nazi thing.
It's a great thing about, you know, even the most recent indie film we watched, which wasn't great, but in my opinion, wasn't utterly disastrous. At least they were still confident that Nazis were bad. You know, they weren't trying to both sides it. They weren't modernizing and saying, well, some Nazis weren't quite so bad. No, Nazis are still bad.
Yeah.
I'm glad they've got that confidence. I mean, Nazis turn up in things like... they are great fodder for fantasy. Nazis sort of turn up in Starship Troopers, the Paul Verhoeven film. Have you ever seen that?
I have seen that, many years ago.
And, you know, that is very explicitly about Nazis. And I think Verhoeven has said that it's him trying to deal with his own memories of growing up in Holland during the Second World War. The characters turn up, you know, literally wearing Nazi uniforms, wearing jack boots and the caps at the end of the film. They're, you know, very happy to use Nazi imagery. But the clever thing in Starship Troopers is it's the good guys, or at least the people that we have been following all the way through the film, who turn out to be the Nazis. It's an extremely fascistic film. It's all about... might being right, about answering every problem with violence. It's about othering the enemy and totalitarianism, and yet it's all told from the point of view of the people who are the Nazis. There's Kiki chiming in. She will never leave me alone for a popcorn counter. Hold that Nazi thought. I'm going to go and get Kiki. Hold on for a second.
Okay. Kiki clearly doesn't like Nazis. It's my kind of dog. She could never be a German Shepherd.
Well, that was very dismissive. I went out to go and scoop her up and say, oh, won't you come in here for a cuddle? And she just gave me one look and then darted up the stairs.
Oh.
She's not in the mood to join us for the popcorn counter today after all.
I don't think she likes Nazis. As soon as you started saying that, she started barking.
Yeah, she's a dog with good taste.
Yeah. I was going to say, someone who has done a good job portraying and using Nazis is Steven Spielberg. I think one of the best Nazis I've ever seen on screen, or best performances, is Ralph Fiennes in, I think it's Schindler's List, right? He just incarnates that evil so beautifully. And I know Spielberg is, along with Tom Hanks, just obsessed with World War II stories. So he's got a couple of them, but... Saving Private Ryan, too, there's some scenes with Nazis in there that just absolutely are frightening. So I think he accords them their appropriate level of evil and sinisterism. Sinisterism?
That is definitely a word now. It's a word now. Schindler's List, tremendously moving film.
Yeah.
I remember at the time kind of finding the film so moving that it felt like it was sort of criticism proof, and having a long conversation with a friend at the time who was kind of saying, oh no, it still deserves criticism, it's not perfect. Pathetically, I may have said this before, Saving Private Ryan, you know, I was not able to make it past the first 20 minutes of that film. So I have never seen the rest of it. I have no desire to return to Schindler's List, having seen it once.
Yeah.
There's no part of me that thinks, yeah, I want to go through that again. And same for Saving Private Ryan. I have no great desire to sit through those first 20 minutes in order to get to the rest of the film, which is probably just as dispiriting.
I was going to say, is that because as a man of medicine, you just saw too many injuries that needed treating? Or
I was kind of a bit overwhelmed by thinking, well, you know, it is absolute hell on earth, that beach scene at the beginning of Private Ryan. Yeah. And I couldn't quite get over the fact that, you know, although this is a movie, you know, this did actually happen to real actual people.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't quite take on the emotional load of sitting through that in the name of entertainment.
Yeah.
No matter how much we want to rescue Matt Damon, I couldn't get through the rest of it. So we were watching it and I said, I'm just going to go to the kitchen.
Yeah.
Couldn't watch the rest of it. It was just too much.
Came out, everyone said the first 20 minutes, maybe the first 10 minutes. It's just blows your mind early on, and then it's 2 hours of looking for Matt Damon. But it's a pretty impressive opening, and I don't know if it really captures the D-Day invasion that well, but it's certainly graphic.
Too much for me. But then if you want to talk about realism, maybe the most realistic film about Nazis, or the aftermath of Nazis. Is it aftermath or aftermath? Aftermath.
We say
aftermath. Aftermath.
Don't you guys say maths over there? Aftermaths.
Yes. I've suddenly realized I don't know. Having spoken English for many, many years, I've suddenly realized I don't know how to use it.
It's sinisterism, I tell you. Yes. Sinisterism. Aftermath, I think, is what we say.
Aftermath. Aftermath. Aftermath, I think it is.
Aftermath.
How late is it? Aftermath. Is my brain just stopped working? Anyway, the film I'm trying to get towards, which I also probably won't now be able to pronounce properly, is Germany Year Zero. I've said this before, which is that probably the best piece of advice I got in the whole year at film school that we spent together. The best single piece of advice I got was that if you ever see that a film directed by Robert Rossellini is showing somewhere, you must make every effort to try and go and see that film.
Yeah.
I still think that's the best advice I received in film school. Germany Year Zero.
Yeah.
Pretty remarkable film. I remember before seeing it that I believed that it was a film that was going to be about the origins of Nazism.
Yeah.
And yet it is absolutely the opposite. It's set in, I think, is it Berlin at the very end of the Second World War? So after the defeat, after the armistice. The reason it's called Germany Year Zero is because Germany has basically been blasted back to the year zero.
Yeah.
It's like you know, the beginning of time, the end of time. It's it's absolutely, it's hell on earth.
Wow.
And it's shot, you know, in the real bombed out Berlin.
Mm.
That's a pretty shocking film about the results of Nazism. I'm not going to say aftermath now because I'm not convinced that I know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, I avoid it. I would avoid it like you'd avoid the Nazis. We talked about making fun of them, and so the title that came to me immediately was The Producers. We talked about that a little bit before that.
Oh yeah,
Mel Brooks making fun of Hitler and turning him into a song and dance man, and we talked a little bit about it. Is that the way to attack that ideology or that philosophy, is to make fun of it, or do you have to do a combination of things in order to handle the Nazis?
I'm sure whatever we've done with the Nazis, it's clearly not enough.
Yeah.
Because there are still pockets of people who think they had a good idea.
Yeah.
I don't know whether if we got in the DeLorean and went back through time, is there a better way to have handled it? I don't know whether we should have... should we have... I don't know. What should we have done? What should we have done to stop the Nazis coming back? Is that even possible? Is ideology?
Yeah.
Can it possibly be utterly obliterated?
I don't think so.
Does one eternally run the risk? You know, it's that question about the price of freedom being eternal vigilance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it possible to stop bad ideas coming back?
Probably.
Or
not.
Are they always going to resurface in one form or another?
Yeah, I think you have to be much more forceful when it emerges, and just have, like, obviously you need to use different tactics. I think, making light of it or making comedy of the antagonist or the enemy probably has its place, but at the same time, you can't let that ideology spread or, you know, become militaristic. Otherwise, you're in trouble. It leads me towards Tarantino, though, who tries to, you know, fictionally, narratively change history in Inglourious Basterds, right? Where he's got characters.
No, I haven't seen that. Tell me.
So he has characters who are sort of Nazi hunters. And the idea is that ultimately they're able to assassinate Hitler and prevent evil from happening. It's this, and I think it's something he sort of does it in a later film too. When Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where he sort of eliminates Charles Manson. So it's this, you can do that in film, sort of rewriting, and maybe it's a playbook for how to deal with antagonists like that. But he sort of rewrites history in both of those films, where he's trying to get to evil before it gets to. Before it gets to innocent victims. So,
Wish fulfillment.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it, I suppose, has to do with education. This idea of eliminating history reminds me, I don't know whether you've seen, is it Das Schreckliche Mädchen? It's a film directed by Michael Verhoeven, the second Verhoeven of the podcast. No relation to Paul Verhoeven. It's a 1990 German film, which I've seen twice now, actually, surprisingly, based on a true story about a 16-year-old girl who enters. She's a German girl at school. She enters an essay competition, and the title of the essay is My Town During the Third Reich.
Hmm.
And so she does some research, and in 1990, there were still plenty of people for whom the Second World War was a living memory.
Yeah.
And, she discovers that her town was, really resisted the Third Reich, and people were real holdouts, and they were very skeptical of Hitler. And, they managed to keep the Nazis at bay in her town when she was young. But she also finds that people are not very keen to let her read records, and people lock her out of the library, and people refuse to give her old newspapers, and she very gradually uncovers that the story that all the people tell in the town is complete lies, and actually there were several concentration camps very close to her hometown, and many people in her town who are still alive were prominent Nazis during the Second World War.
Ooh, wow.
And yet people have somehow managed to sweep it all under the carpet.
Yeah.
That was what I thought last week when we watched Triumph of the Will. Not everybody in that film died at the end of the Second World War.
Definitely not.
There were plenty of people. There were, kids cheering at the side of the road. There were, families who were saluting Hitler. Well, what happened to them? They seemed very happy about the Nazis in 1935.
Yeah.
What were they doing in 1955?
Yeah.
And I'm guessing they weren't telling people what a shame it is that Hitler didn't succeed with his master plan.
Yeah.
There's this notion that a population can become mad as a group. It's this kind of big group madness, and then once the spell is lifted, people shuffle back to their lives and try not to think about what they've done.
I hear you.
But that's exactly what Das Schreckliche Mädchen is about. Mm. And based on a true story, I think it's kind of pretty closely based on what really happened to this real teenager.
Yeah.
Eternal vigilance. That's the price, isn't it?
Yeah. And it is good that we've got a record like Triumph of the Will to really show us what it was like, what the ideology was.
Do you think other
like?
People who watch Triumph of the Will see the same thing that you and I do? Do you think some people see that and think, hey, nice uniforms, great logos, that looks like a good idea?
Well, as you said, I think there's a small percentage. You can't kill the ideology. So I think there are some people that would think exactly that way. But I think most people are completely reviled when they see it. Oof.
I hope so. But I wonder whether we should be showing that to kids in school.
Oof.
I tell you, the other most effective anti-Nazi film that you could show kids in school is the film They Saved Hitler's Brain, which I have never seen, but it has a unique film. It has the very unusual honor of being one of the very few films to score 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Apparently it's one of the worst films ever made. I think we should try and dig that out for a future for a future film club. They Saved Hitler's Brain. It's got to be available on, it'll be on Amazon probably, won't it?
Or
how
YouTube.
Could it not be? That's where terrible films go to die.
That at least leaves us with a laugh. Maybe we can go out on Hitler's brain. We'll have to find the pair. The film. We're looking for a very certain film to pair it with, but we'll get it. We'll get it. That sounds good.
Yeah, go on a laugh. That is the answer. Yeah, on a laugh. More popcorn.
Yes.